Bhakti Gajanta Stotara Sata Shishi Rastra Vengra Shila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura Maharashi Dha Rupadi Ki Jai Ananta Kodi Vaishnava Dindi Ki Jai Iskand Founder Acharya Shila Prabhupada Ki Jai Namacharya Shila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem to go Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Arayra Gadar Hatri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Ki Jai Shishi Radha Krishna Gopina Sham Kundar Arakundi Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Shri Shri Navaritam ki jai, Shri Shri Mayapur Dham ki jai, Shri Shri Mathura Dham ki jai, Shri Shri Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai, Tulasi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Gangamaya ki jai, Jamunamaya ki jai, Gaur Premanandi, Harinama Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Shri Brihat Mridanga ki jai, Transcendental Prasadam Distribution ki jai, Shri Shri Gornitai ki jai, Shri Radhamaran Mohan ki jai, Shri Shri Pralad Nishringa ki jai, Shri Shri Vishpadan Jatra ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. All glorious be Samaveta, all glorious be Samaveta, all glorious be Samaveta, all glorious be Shri Shri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Namaskrityam naram chayvam narotamam devim sarasutim vyasam dhato jayam udirayat nasta praeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utamashlokir bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, 2nd canon, 9th chapter. We're still reading from the 34th text because it's a very long purport, one of the seed verses. So we'll continue with Prabhupada's purport. The verse is Vidaritam yat patieta nat patieta chatmani tadvidyarat manomayam yatavaso yatatamaha. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Om Agena Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitana Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Svapadantikam. So I'm sorry we're starting a bit late. It was actually up till about 1:30 this morning. Sometimes things happen that are unexpected. So the class will be a little bit short. So we're going to continue reading Prabhupada's lengthy purport, and I'll comment as we go. The same man, however, is enlightened in the disciplic succession from Brahmaji, who was personally instructed by the Lord, or in the disciplic succession from Arjuna, who was personally instructed by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita. He accepts this statement of the Lord, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattak sarva pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. The Lord is the original source of all emanations, and everything that is created, maintained, and annihilated exists by the energy of the Lord. The sane man who knows this is actually learned, and therefore he becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Although the reflectory energy of the Lord displays various illusions to the eyes of persons with a poor fund of knowledge, the sane person knows clearly that the Lord can act, even from far, far beyond our vision, by his different energies, just as fire can diffuse heat and light from a distant place. In the medical science of the ancient sages, known as the Ayurveda, there is a definite acceptance of the Lord's supremacy in the following words. Jagat yonir anicca syat chidanandayaka rupina Pumsosti prakritir nitya pratichayeva vasvata Achetana pichoitanya yogena paramatmanaha Akarod vishvamakidam anityam natakarkritam.
There is one Supreme Person who is the progenitor of this cosmic manifestation and whose energy acts as prakriti, or the material nature, dazzling like a reflection. By such illusory action of prakriti, even dead matter is caused to move by the cooperation of living energy of the Lord, and the material world appears like a dramatic performance to the ignorant eyes. Now, the Lord can do anything, and He can even reverse the tide or the direction of time. It is said that time and tide waits for no man. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also said, in reference to Ayur, Ayur means life or science, or the science of life. Ayur harati vaipungsam. This is from the first canto. Udyanastam chayanaso. Tasyate ukshana. One who is practicing Krishna consciousness, or one who is in the process of practicing Krishna consciousness, is not affected by the rising and setting of the sun. The rising and the setting of the sun, according to Sukadeva Goswami, takes away the life of all living beings. Ayurharati vaipumsan ujjanastam chayanasa tashirte yukshanat vaiva. Uttama shloka vartaya. But one who is glorifying the pastimes of the Lord is not affected. So he is the one who is made exempt. Therefore this Ayurveda, the actual principle of Ayurveda, is to extend life. That's the medical science that Prabhupada is quoting here. But for one who is engaged in devotional service, he's not affected, even though the aging process is powerful and affects every living entity. This is also described at some length in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Especially we read the story of King Paranjan, who gradually saw the deterioration of his life in this allegorical story. And after he used his sense gratification, he reached a point, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's said in very poetic words, it says, he reached a point in life not very much liked by one who is too much attached to material energy. In other words, he reached the point of old age where his senses were very weak, he couldn't hear, see, smell, taste, everything was very deteriorated. And Prabhupada also writes in the purports to these verses that one who is engaged, Uttama Shloka Vartaya, in glorifying the service of the Lord with transcendental songs, such a person is not affected in the same way. The other example, of course, we know very well is Bhishma Dev. He was stricken. He was on a bed of arrows, and he couldn't move. And yet he was so perfectly, of course he had the benediction that he could die by his own will, but he was so perfectly composed that when the various great sages and munis from around the universe came to see him, including Arjuna and Krishna himself, he addressed them with very sweet words. Not only sweet words, but he addressed them appropriately, just in the proper etiquette. So he addressed Krishna as Parthasarathi, the chariot driver of Arjuna, because he was related to Krishna in the rasa of chivalry. So he addressed him very nicely, and Arjuna was very pleased. So even he set the example of one who was beset with all sorts of pain and tribulation, what to speak of old age, and yet he was not affected. This is the special ability or prerogative of a devotee. In the purports to those verses, Prabhupada says that one devotee, any devotee, should see that tribulations or so-called miseries or reverses affected by the Lord, apparently by karma, are actually affected directly by the Lord. And these tribulations should be taken as benefits or favors, blessings by the Lord. This is the way he says a devotee must accept all tribulations as blessings from the Lord. Because this opportunity afforded to Bhishma, for example, was an opportunity to actually see face to face Krishna and speak to him directly in his same chivalrous mood. From the Mahabharata, we also learn that Draupadi was present there, and she was smiling a little sarcastically. So Bhishma saw this, and as he was lying on the bed of arrows, he said, "Why are you looking at me like that at such a grave hour?" And she said, "Well, when I was in the court of the Kurus and they were trying to take off my sari, you sat there and you didn't do anything. You just sat and didn't interfere. So now I'm just feeling it's a little bit hypocritical that you're speaking all these very elevated words of Dharma and proper behavior and etiquette when I remember that you didn't try to save me at that time when you could have." So Bhishmadev said, "When I was in the court of the Kurus, I had an obligation to Duryodhana, and therefore I took his side, and my whole being was very contaminated. In fact, I had to eat their very foodstuffs. And because of that, my whole system became contaminated because it wasn't prasada. And my whole blood was contaminated. But now that I have been shot with so many arrows and all the blood has drained out of my body, I feel that I'm becoming purified and now I can speak Dharma." So in this way she was pacified, she was satisfied. Now also as Prabhupada mentions, there the Lord has the ability to change material nature. We were talking the other day how the imprint of one's karma, so to speak, may appear in the hand or in the stars. But Krishna can change so many things. And according to medical science, there are ways in which even the lifespan can be extended. So we may remember, this is also from the Mahabharata, but you remember Shukracharya. He was the spiritual master, we remember, of Bali Maharaj. And he was known as the seminal spiritual master. And sometimes he had to be rejected as his instructions were rejected by Bali Maharaj. Because he was the family spiritual master, not the actual spiritual master who gave second birth. But he possessed many material powers because they were invested in him by Lord Krishna. And one of these powers was called Sanjeevan. And we also read about this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that through Sanjeevan, Jeevan means life or life air, and Sanjeevan, sometimes it's a name that they put on Ayurvedic medical preparations now in India, but it was the power to bring the dead back to life. He had this great power. So he was also the spiritual master of the daityas. So the demigods wanted, they're always battling with the demons, they wanted to get this power to bring the dead warriors back to life because they were having battles always. The demigods. The demons and demigods are always at war with one another. So because they were often put into difficulty, they wanted to have this special benediction to bring the dead back to life, Sanjeevan. So they conspired, they thought how to do it. So they decided to send one of their nice Brahmin boys named Kacha to learn this art, that he would approach Sukracharya as a brahmacharya. And when a brahmacharya approaches a guru, he should take him as his student. So this happened, and gradually he began to take some instruction from him. And his daughter Devayani also fell very much in love with Kacha. He was a very young, handsome brahmacharya. Anyway, the other demons, they realized they could understand what was happening. They thought they could understand that he had an ulterior motive, this Kacha, and that he wanted to learn actually the art of Sanjeevan. And they didn't want him to learn because then the demigods would have power over them. So they decided to kill him, to kill Kacha. So they seized upon him and they killed him, they tore his body apart and they fed his flesh to the dogs because they didn't want him to be brought back to life. So Devayani saw he was missing one day. He didn't come home. He was taking care of the cows. And she complained to her father. She said, he's not here. Something's happened. And then by his brahminical power, he could understand that another group of the daityas, they actually seized upon him and killed him. So he invoked the mantra of the Sanjeevan and brought him back to life, even though his flesh was already consumed by the dogs. So the demons were very thwarted by this and upset. So they seized upon him when he was alone tending the cows. And this time they seized upon his body and they pulverized into many pieces and threw it out on the ocean, thinking that he could never be brought to life. But again, Shukracharya invoked his Sanjivan potency and brought him back to life. So then they thought very deeply, there must be some other way to do this. So they again killed him, they ground his body up into little pieces. This time they put the pieces in a beverage, which they offered to Shukracharya to drink, and they induced him to drink this. So then he drank the drink, and then the remnants of the body were in the inside. So they thought, now if he tries to bring him back to life, he himself will be killed. So again, Devayani, she complained and told Shukracharya. Now by this time, Shukracharya was beginning to understand what actually happened. Before he didn't know, but by his mystic power, he could understand that this Kacha actually came on behalf of the demigods to learn this great power. But because he had accepted him as his student, he thought, all right, what can I do? And there was some affection developed there. So, and he also became very, tired and disappointed that his other demon friends, they were trying to do all these tricks, and even to the point of maybe he would have to die. So he sometimes also complained. You remember there was that dispute that arose between Devayani and Samyistra. And at that time he was thinking, this business of being the family spiritual master isn't very nice. I should just go away and live as Madhukari and accept grains that are thrown away in the fields, because life would be much more simple. But because he took this position, he'd had to continue. So he felt the same way now that this condition, his student, was now ground up inside his body. So then he thought how to bring him back to life and not die at the same time. So then he decided, he knew now what this mission was of Kacha. So he said, he was able to communicate with his soul in his body. And he said, now I'm going to teach you the Sanjivan mantra so that you can come back to life. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to invoke this mantra. I'm going to bring you back to life. My body will then be broken to pieces. You'll burst out of my abdomen. And then, because I have already taught you the Sanjivan mantra, I will teach you while you are still inside my stomach. Then you will use it to bring me back to life. And because you are going to burst out from my stomach, you are also like my son and I'm like your mother. And I should mention that Devayani, she was also always trying to marry this boy, but he would never. And one of the reasons Shukracharya gave that she could never marry him is because he was her brother, because he was going to be born from his own abdomen. So anyway, that's a whole other story, but he brought him back to life, and his body was completely blasted open and shredded into pieces, and then Kracha, invoking the power of the Sanjivan mantra, brought Shukracharya back to life. So that's a very interesting story in the Mahabharata. And it shows that Krishna can change the course of history if he wants. He has the power. Even his agents may have the power to bring the dead back to life. And of course, that happened also in the battle with Prahlad and the demons. Sometimes their bodies were of the demons were rent asunder and cut into pieces, and they also had some special powers to bring them back together. So the point is that Krishna can do anything. Krishna is the center of everything. And he creates everything very nicely. Also, it's mentioned in the Ishopanishad that the life should be God-centered. Ishyavashyamidam sarvam jatkin cham jagat cham jagat tena jatena punjita madgriha kesha sviranam. Everything that is within this universe is owned and controlled by the Lord. And every living entity should accept only those things which are set aside as his quota and not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So to know that Krishna is the source of everything, we were discussing this the other day, is to know that everything is actually ordered by the Lord. He controls ultimately life and death. Yastrindra gopamata vendrama hosva karma. The regulations of the sufferings and enjoyments of all the living entities, it's stated in Brahma Samhita, are actually ultimately controlled by the Lord. So when he says in the Ishopanishad that one has a quota. That means that every living being has a certain amount of pleasure and a certain amount of enjoyment that is designated. And when one encroaches upon, Prabhupada writes in the purport to that first verse in Ishopanishad, encroaches upon another's property indiscreetly or indiscriminately, not knowing that Krishna is the source of everything, that he's got his quota, then there's great trouble which begins. So the complete picture is to know that Krishna is actually the source of everything. We were talking about this a little bit yesterday, how people are wondering why there's so much poison. And the real reason is that they don't see the complete picture, that everything's actually controlled and owned by the Lord, and that we only have a certain amount. And if we try to enjoy or possess more than that amount, which is our rightful share, everyone has a rightful share of enjoyment and suffering, or to own and possess in this universe, then there is immediately suffering. So one doesn't have the right to encroach. This is the order established by Krishna. And of course Krishna can change everything, but human beings have created now these artificial boundaries between countries, and it's artificial, and therefore they're misunderstanding, they're trying to encroach on one another unnecessarily, upon the animals, upon the insects. People are concerned that so many species of insects and birds and beasts are becoming extinct because there's so much encroachment. The trees are being cut down. And Prabhupada writes in the seventh canto, in Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe, that cutting down trees unnecessarily is the greatest of all sinful activities. So in this way, human beings are gradually encroaching upon the natural order set aside in this universe by the Lord to make everything work. Om Purnam Madaha Purnam Idam. Everything is there, everything is complete, everything is properly done. But because of excess greed, due to lack of Krishna consciousness, thinking it is mine, I am everything, there is encroachment, and therefore there is trouble. So as long as there's lack of spiritual consciousness, there's excess greed, then the situation will be unpleasant for the living entity, difficult for the sane man to function. So Prabhupada's talking about how the sane man will adopt Krishna consciousness. There is one Supreme Person who is the progenitor of this cosmic manifestation and whose energy acts as prakriti, or the material nature, dazzling like a reflection. But such illusory action or prakriti, by such illusory action or of prakriti, even dead matter is caused to move by the cooperation of the living energy of the Lord. And the material world appears like a dramatic performance to the ignorant eyes. Natya natyadaro tara. The ignorant person, therefore, may even be a scientist or a physiologist in the drama of prakriti, while the sane person knows the prakriti as the illusory energy of the Lord. By such a conclusion, as confirmed by Bhagavad Gita, it is clear that the living entities are also a display of the Lord's superior energy, para-prakriti, just as the material world is a display of the Lord's inferior energy, apara-prakriti. Superior energy of the Lord cannot be as good as the Lord, although there is very little difference between the energy and possessor of the energy of the fire and heat. Fire is possessed of heat, but heat is not fire. This simple thing is not understood by the man with the poor fund of knowledge, who falsely claims that the fire and heat are the same. This energy of the fire, namely heat, is explained here as a reflection and not directly fire. Therefore, the living energy, represented by the living entities, is the reflection of the Lord and never the Lord himself. Being the reflection of the Lord, the existence of the living entity is dependent on the Supreme Lord, who is the original light. This material energy may be compared to darkness, as actually it is darkness, and the activities of the living entities in the darkness are reflections of the original light. The Lord should be understood by the context of this verse. Non-dependence of both energies of the Lord is explained as maya or illusion. No one can make a solution of the darkness of ignorance simply by the reflection of light. Similarly, no one can come out of material existence simply by the reflected light of the common man. One has to receive the light from the original light itself. The reflection of sunlight in the darkness is unable to drive out the darkness, but the sunlight outside the reflection can drive out the darkness completely. In darkness, no one can see the things in a room. Therefore, a person in the dark is afraid of snakes and scorpions, although there may be not such things. But in the light, the things in the room can be clearly seen, and the fear of snakes and scorpions is at once removed. Therefore, one has to take shelter of the light of the Lord, as in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, and not in the reflective personalities who have no such touch with the Lord. No one should hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam from a person who does not believe in the existence of the Lord. Such a person is already doomed, and any association with such doomed persons makes the associator also doomed. There's one more paragraph, and then I'll comment. According to the Padma Purana, within the material compass, there are innumerable material universes, and all of them are full of darkness. Any living being, beginning from the Brahmas, there are innumerable Brahmas in innumerable universes, to the insignificant ant are all born in darkness, and they require factual light from the Lord to see him directly, just as the sun can be seen only by the direct light of the sun. No lamp or man-made torchlight, however powerful it may be, can help one see the sun. The sun reveals itself. Therefore, the action of different energies of the Lord, or the personality of Godhead himself, can be realized by the light manifested by the causeless mercy of the Lord. The impersonalists say that God cannot be seen. God can be seen by the light of God and not by man-made speculations. Here, this light is specifically mentioned as Vidya, which is an order by the Lord to Brahma. This direct order of the Lord is a manifestation of his internal energy, and this particular energy is the means of seeing the Lord face to face. Not only Brahma, but anyone who may be graced by the Lord to see such merciful direct internal energy can also realize the personality of Godhead without any mental speculation. So this is another way of saying that a devotee who enters onto the path of spiritual realization can immediately bypass all the usual requirements of great learning and great intelligence and other special prerogatives that are enjoyed by Lord Brahma, other assignments by Krishna, and can attain to the same level as Brahma, Lord Brahma. Actually, any living entity can gain up to 78% the qualities of Krishna, like Lord Brahma. So at first, Krishna is very esoteric in a way. He's very hard to reach. And in another sense, through the agency of Maya, he's very difficult because there are so many sins that we enact in this material world. And we have to pay retribution for these sinful acts. We're judged by Yamaraj. So there are sinful reactions sometimes. Of course, in his merciful manifestation, Namo Mahavadyanaya, Lord Chaitanya does not take account of these sinful activities. He actually does not even see them, even though they are noticed by Krishna himself. So Krishna's system is that if one acts improperly or offends, one has to atone, or at least one has to beg forgiveness of the Vaishnava. It is also said, Vishwanath Chakravarti comments, that one may be forgiven by a Vaishnava, but the dust of the Vaishnava will not forgive because it has an intimate relationship with Krishna. So if one intentionally or inadvertently happens to offend a Vaishnava, it is recommended in all the Shastras that one should try to beg forgiveness, one should serve that Vaishnava, try to please him and satisfy him in different ways, at least for 1 or 2 days, so that the sinful activity can be forgiven. Queen Kunti prays in the 8th chapter of the first canon of Bhagavad Gita, Tatam paramahamsanam muninam amalatmanam bhakti yogam vidamartam tatam pashyem histriya. She also prays that your devotional service, Tatam paramahamsanam, is meant for the great paramahamsas and yogis, yoginam, and the yogis, yoginam. So she is asking, Tatam paramahamsanam yoginam amalatmanam bhakti yoga, by bhakti yoga. How is it possible that we ordinary people, she is mentioning her position as a woman, how can we approach your holiness if your association is reserved for the amalatmas, the pure, unadulterated paramahansas? So Prabhupada comments there that Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada was saying here, although it appears to be available to only the most elevated of souls, anyone can actually attain to Krishna consciousness. So in Mayapur, Prabhupada was speaking on this verse once, teachings of Queen Kunti. He was saying that anyone can get the mercy of the Lord, especially in this age of Kali. And he said that sometimes we see an ant crosses the feet of the Archivigraha of the Lord. And he said that ant should be considered equal to the Pujari. If he has gotten some, he's not there by accident. by some special mercy, he's coming in direct touch with the Lord. So what to speak of any other human being, male, female, Eskimo, or tribal, or whatever, we're talking about these different persons. Everyone under the kind and merciful guidance of Lord Chaitanya has full facility. Full facility. In the beginning of Sanatana Goswami's instructions by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was a great elevated person in the material world. Sanatana Goswami was a minister. He had a great wealth. And his first questions were to ask, who am I? He also embraced the lotus feet of the Lord and said, I am nothing, I am worthless. I've been associating with very low people. Please instruct me. Tell me who I am. So anyone, whether he's very rich or very poor, is a beggar before the Lord. One who is even materially very wealthy to become the Lord's devotee, he poses himself like Sanatana, who is also very, very learned in many languages and in many other ways. He poses himself as being completely ignorant and completely useless, having no knowledge. Just as Lord Chaitanya also said to Pakasananda Saraswati, my spiritual master, he considered me a great fool. So this is the proper approach, to act like a great fool before the spiritual master. This is the symptom of surrender. And then, through this transparency, Krishna, through Lord Chaitanya especially, becomes very pleased to bestow his mercy on anyone and everyone. And transcendental consciousness, which is ordinarily not easily available, flows very freely through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So although we're born in a very retrograde time, we have to suffer in this Kali Yuga so much, we have this special dispensation of being able to go back to Godhead simply by the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So if we put great faith that this is the incarnation, Kale Kale Nama Rupa Krishna Avatar, that this is actually the way that Lord Chaitanya descends, this is the way Krishna himself descends in this age, we can get all the benefits of all the great and difficult practices of the other ages and attain our original blissful Krishna consciousness. And then, unlike the false security we hear in the fairy tales, we can actually live happily ever after. Because there is an ever after, and that's the spiritual world. So that's our goal, and that can be attained by Krishna's instructions, following Krishna's instructions. So that's the first or second of these seed verses in Srimad Bhagavatam. So do you have any comments or questions? Yes.
When bad times come, I feel in my life that it's not so, I can see that it's a benediction, because I was two times in hospital, and so I cannot properly chant and read. My conscience is little tamas, yeah. And I cannot see that this is benediction of the Lord. How can I see this properly in this time of my life?
In this time, when you're suffering, you mean?
Yes.
Tasyarte shano nitya. One chants the holy name of the Lord constantly. It is nityam bhagavata seva. Nitya means eternal. So chanting is not something that we do out of our own power, but it's actually a sound that descends from the spiritual sky. It's not coming from our own power. It's like when you switch on a light, the light goes on. The light's coming from somewhere else. It's not coming from your finger. Or when you switch on the radio, that sound is coming from a higher energy than ourselves. So it's not a matter that we are the energy, but we are the conduit. We're the vehicle for receiving that energy. So we have to make our consciousness in such a way that Krishna consciousness will come to us. It will flow through us. So it's said when our heart is purified, in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna will come and sit in our heart. So we have to act in such a way that not that we will be able to travel to the spiritual world, but that Krishna will actually come to us. He will be visible in his murti. He will be visible in our heart. He will be visible through the shastras, and he will be visible through the spiritual master. So if you remember, you just have to become a vehicle and let the chanting come to you very purely and serve the holy name. It's not that the holy name will serve you, but you have to serve Krishna as the holy name. Then you'll see that it's not actually very difficult. You just have to be a little pure in heart and let Krishna's name appear on your tongue and then just continue. And if you continue, even though it may be difficult, but if you just make a vow to continue, then Krishna will gradually purify you. There's one statement Prabhupada made once. Rigopati told me this, so I know it's a bona fide statement. Prabhupada said, if you just chant Hare Krishna your whole life, follow your vows, and chant the Maha Mantra, you will go back to Godhead after this lifetime. That is guaranteed. So, if you donate your time, like Krishna says, we were discussing today, Manmana Bhava Manbhakto, he has this program. Just give yourself, give your mind, Manmana Bhava Manbhakto, offer obeisances unto me, become my devotee, offer homage, offer donations. If you give the donation of your life by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and be a devotee, then Krishna will be very pleased. And you can actually attain the spiritual world, even in this body. You can become Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means that even while in this body, you can become fully spiritual. So Krishna consciousness, it is said, is very simple if our minds are uncomplicated. And somehow if our mind is very complex, Krishna consciousness also becomes very complicated. So you just have to chant with determination and know that this is the Yuga Dharma. It is guaranteed by Krishna. And if you do it with determination, sincerity, and try to become a devotee, then it will become easy. And you'll greatly relish the taste. Sometimes people, when they're hungry, when they're not so hungry, they want to know, what I'm going to eat, what is it? You tell me what you're going to make for me. What's it going to be like? Then I'll decide. So with the holy name, we shouldn't be so selective. We should just, in any condition, realize that if we chant, it's like a person who's very hungry. Whatever it is, he'll relish it. So wherever we are, and however we chant, we'll greatly benefit if we develop that desire. So somehow we have to develop that desire. And if we want it, if we develop enthusiasm, utsahan, ruchi, that's the first principle, enthusiasm. Utsahan nishchaya karyatakur. Somehow we understand we have to be enthusiastic, then gradually everything else will come. Even the karmic people say that to go out and sell something, you have to be very enthusiastic. That's the first principle of doing anything successful. Even in the material world, you have to want to do it. You have to want that more than anything else. That's how people become great, supposedly, in their field. Great athletes, or great salesmen, or great philosophers. They're enthusiastic. So in Krishna consciousness, it's like that. If we just develop that enthusiasm for Krishna's name, then that's the beginning. From that, everything else will come. Does that help?
Sometimes one sees that when sometimes Krishna is giving mercy, or if, for example, some service one could do better, or chanting. But when one speaks to others, then one loses that mercy or the perfection which has something. So, what is it? What if this comes through the reaction of by speaking one gets puffed up, or what is the reason that sometimes one sees that Lord is giving the mercy, but as soon as one tells to others, that one loses the chance?
By speaking, ideally we should be remembered, because Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam, by Smaranam, by Shravanam and Kirtanam, it increases our ability to remember, so it should. And when we speak Krishna consciousness, we're pleasing Krishna. We may not know it, but Krishna, as we were reading in Bhagavad Gita, this is what pleases Krishna the most. So, spiritual means everything is increasing. material means if we take a cup of water and we pour it out, there's only half the amount left, the balanced portion. Spiritual life, if we pour the water out and put the glass back, it's still full. That's the difference between matter and spirit. So in spiritual existence, spirit has no end. It always increases. So if we increase, if we give, we become again filled up. Prabhupada gave the example of the tree, which is full of fruit. We become very filled up. At least that's the spiritual, transcendental principle. Another is in the spiritual world, the gopis. They are not material. At least that's the spiritual, transcendental principle. Another is in the spiritual world, the gopis. They are not materially jealous. One gopi is pushing another one towards Krishna or getting pleasure and seeing Krishna get pleasure. So the idea is the more we give of ourselves, the more we become filled up. The more we give ourselves to Krishna, body and mind and words, then the more Krishna gives us. So, at least from the proper ideal perspective of speaking Krishna consciousness, kirtana, it should be increasing. I don't know if that, I'm maybe missing something in your question. Another point maybe, I don't know if this is more to your point, but Krishna consciousness, it is sometimes said, runs on two tracks. Just like a train. A train has to have two tracks. So one track is our spiritual purity, and the other track is our preaching. Now, Prabhupada said purity is the force. We can preach effectively if we ourselves are very spiritually pure. Therefore, every morning we worship the deity. Every night we hear. And we have a very powerful program given to us by Prabhupada that we worship the deity, we worship the spiritual master. We hear every day, every evening. So that our, this is like the bathing principle. The mind has to be cleansed and bathed and purified and injected by hearing. And then side by side, simultaneously, we're charged to preach to others Krishna consciousness. So if we keep filling ourselves up with hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and worship of the deities, then we become spiritually potent to preach. And as you point out, if somehow we neglect that side of our internal spiritual advancement, reading and hearing constantly, kirtaniya sadapkari, it's just like we say at the beginning of the Bhagavad, nityam bhagavata sevaya, it's an eternal, ongoing principle. It's the injection that, you know, the material energy is taking away, just like sometimes you have to have injections over and over again to clear away the disease. So the material disease is like that. We have to keep injecting the Srimad Bhagavatam again and again, and bathing in the nectarian Maha Mantra over and over again. Then we become pure. And if we don't, as your question indicates, then in the process of spreading Krishna consciousness, of meeting so many difficult material elements, we can become effective and we can lose. We can become the servants of Maya. It's possible that our preaching activity can ultimately deteriorate into karmic activity. And this actually happens sometimes when devotees avoid their spiritual purity. So this is the two tracks. If the preaching track is there, but the spiritual purity track is disintegrated, then the train will fall off the track. So these are the two things that our Krishna consciousness must run on. Without purity, there, we will be ineffective and we can become victimized by the material energy. In the name of preaching even, sometimes it happens. We saw sometimes some devotees, they were very powerful preachers, and because they lost their spiritual purity, they lost their whole facility to preach. So we have to be careful in that way. There was that story from the Panchatantra about the monkey and the alligator, and the idea was that the monkey wanted the alligator to the alligator wanted the monkey to come and eat with him. Anyway, he tried to, it's a long story, but he tried to trick the monkey into going to his home. His plan was actually to devour him, and somehow the monkey escaped. So the idea is that we shouldn't give our inner heart to material nature. In the course of preaching, we may have to make friends with so many people, but Rupa Goswami warns against this also, that we have to be careful not to associate too much with people who are greedy for mundane achievements. Does that help? Is that addressing your question? In the spiritual world, there is only present. There's no past or future. Everything is present. Sometimes we speak about Krishna's pastimes, but actually, in the spiritual world, there's no past. Everything is present. And Krishna actually sees, he is called Trikalagya. He sees past, present, and future. Therefore, he's called Trikala. Tri means three, Kala means time, and Gya means knower. He's the knower of all times. Because in the spiritual world, everything is timeless. The living entities have no death. And they're moving in an ever-expanding upward spiral of love and appreciation and happiness. In the material world, everything has this curve. It starts, it reaches a point, and then it goes down. In the spiritual world, it's not like this, it's like this. Everything is going up. That's the, or maybe we can even say it's going like this, but it never actually stops. So the transcendental relish that's enjoyed by Krishna and the gopis and all the denizens of spiritual world, it's always increasing. At every moment, it says in Brahma Samhita, every moment the pleasure is growing. So we can't actually understand this from a material point of view, because everything has a beginning and an end in the material world. So tasyarte yakshano nita, one who enters into the field of devotional service, Krishna consciousness, experiences this. As I was saying, ayurharati vaikum sun. He doesn't actually experience the same rising and setting of the sun, because tashyarte yakshano nitya. He's experiencing the ongoing nitya, the eternal principle of Krishna consciousness. So when he wakes up, he doesn't think, oh, it's another day, another. I'm getting older, I've only got 3 hours. But he's tuned in, and he's in touch with the eternal principle of Krishna consciousness. So Satchidananda Vigraha means eternity, knowledge, and bliss. He begins to perceive that there is an eternal nature. And another way of saying timelessness is eternity. He knows that I'm a soul, and I'm going to continue after the demise of this body. And therefore he becomes... This is why the living being becomes peaceful as soon as he starts Krishna consciousness, because he sees that this soul is going to continue even after the death experience. So this is his little sense of the eternality or immortality of the soul. Because we're samples of Krishna, we can begin to experience a sense of timelessness. And therefore the passing of time doesn't cause tribulation and pain. In those chapters about Paranjan, Prabhupada says that one who is Krishna consciousness can work very vigorously, or with great enthusiasm, even up into grand old age. Krishna Das Kaviraj was writing the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. He was in so much pain, so much pain. He had to stand up, couldn't even sit down. But he was in such blissful Krishna consciousness, he was so much in tune with his eternal nature that he was able to write without even feeling it. And Prabhupada also, in his last days, when he was speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, if you read that 10th canto, his philosophy is very precise, very deep, and very perfect. Even though he was lying on his back in intense pain, he was speaking perfectly. So this is Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. One has this eternal sense of timelessness and feeling of bliss, even in of adverse conditions of life.
So that the consciousness of the devotees in the spiritual world is also ever expanding, for to have this ever to recognize this constant this Anschein from the feeling of happiness. Is it also that this consciousness is also ever expanding?
Yeah. Once Prabhupada said that our spiritual measure of our spiritual advancement is in our jolliness. We feel happy, transcendental happiness. Brahmasukhyam is eternal. Should give Brahmasukhyam tunantam, eternal happiness. So if the living entity, as Rishabhya says to his sons, engages in devotional service, or tapo devyam putrape yena sattvam, then the result is you will experience supreme knowledge and unending happiness. So that's the nature of spiritual life. One becomes happy, happier, happier, happiest, and it continues. Yes, because it's always expanding. Yes. Seems to be a limit or unlimited?
A limit.
Yeah. So first of all, as we were saying, Krishna consciousness is a happy process. It is described as susuktam kartam abhiyam. It is joyfully performed, it says in Bhagavad Gita. So devotees are always happy. They're not disappointed and they're not envious. The nature of the spiritual world is there is no envy. The nature of the material world is that there is envy. As soon as one crosses the borderline of non-enviousness and the heart is completely purged of any traces of envy, then effectively we're living in the spiritual world. Then we become Jivan Mukta. Prabhupada once said, we don't need a certificate to tell us when we are out of this material world. As soon as there is no envy in the heart, we're living in the spiritual world. The spiritual world is unlimited. But because it's also a Chintya Veda Veda Tattva. This was the first instruction by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami. Chintya Veda Veda Tattva. He said, who am I? That was his question. And the answer was, Jivara Srupa Nitera Krishnas Nitera Veda Veda Tattva Prakash. That we are simultaneously one and different. So in the spiritual world, Radharani's position can never be equal. No one can actually ever attain her position. And no one can attain the other, the eight principal manjaris, and the other gopis. But because the spiritual world is also unlimited, it appears to be limited in this way, it is also unlimited, there is no limit to how many souls can go into the spiritual world. This is the nature of spirit. It actually has no limit. Now, someone may have an original Siddha Pranala or Sarupa, original Swarupa with Krishna as a blade of grass. But that blade of grass is very satisfied in his position. He's not trying to be a gopi because he has the Shanta Rasa. That's his Rasa. He's very satisfied to be stepped on by Krishna's lotus feet. He feels complete bliss and happiness. Sometimes the tree is just standing there. Now in the material world it's very difficult and unhappy and miserable to be a tree. But in the spiritual world the tree is very happy. Why? Because Krishna is gazing upon the tree. Radha and Krishna are looking at the beautiful tree and their eyes are very satisfied. The tree is very full of life. So once Prabhupada said, another way to understand there's no envy in the spiritual world, this is very nice, he said the tree looks at the grass and says, oh, you're so fortunate you get the touch of Krishna's lotus feet and you make such a very soft place for Krishna and Radharani to walk on. You're so lucky. You're making them feel so good. And you're getting so blessed by getting the blessings of the grace of their lotus feet. And the grass is saying to the tree, how fortunate you are. You're more fortunate than I am because non-stop Krishna and Radharani are looking at you and they're getting great pleasure from seeing your wonderful beauty. So the grass is very, very satisfied to see the condition of the tree. The tree is satisfied to see the condition of the grass. They're all very full of spiritual energy and life, and they're in their original sarup. So all the gopis and the aspiring manjaris and other cowherd boys in the spiritual world, they're greatly appreciating how much pleasure the others are giving to Krishna. They're thinking, oh, you're so wonderful. You're giving Krishna so much pleasure. How wonderful you are. How wonderful it is that I can also associate with you. So my point is that there's a place for everyone and everything, or every living being in the spiritual world. And once one attains one's original sarup, then one is completely happy and completely satisfied. Doesn't want to change. Whatever it may be, feels completely satisfied. Just like when we do our service for Krishna, we may just do a little bit of service in the kitchen. We may not be the one who designs the whole feast, but we're so satisfied because Krishna accepted. Krishna accepted. That's the mark of our satisfaction. If it pleases Krishna, it doesn't matter. The other example in that regard was with Hanuman and the spider. Hanuman was putting the rocks across the ocean to Sri Lanka. And a spider was carrying a little speck of dust. And he was feeling completely satisfied to serve Lord Ramachandra in that way, just as a little insect. So in that way, we have our ability to come to the spiritual world and be completely satisfied. And we can serve those gopis, Gopi Bhajra Parakamala Madhasana Dasana Das. If we can be the servants of their servants, we'll be completely satisfied. Yeah.
In dealings between each other, there's many misunderstanding going on, problems, and how can one bring these relations to on a better platform so that it's more loving exchange between devotees?
Yeah, the deep reason is that because we are still aspirants on a spiritual path and we haven't attained perfection, there must be still some traces of envy in the heart. And therefore, we experience some imperfections within ourselves and within our relationships. So, at least the deep cause is this, that we have to cleanse our hearts and make them very pure, and follow the principle of Trinada Pisimi Chinav, always offering respect to others and never wanting respect among ourselves. Of course, Prabhupada, as we said, he built a house in which everyone can live. But sometimes in the house, there's problems. So, how to live within that house in a very peaceful way is a great art, and it takes a lot of patience, a lot of practice, and a lot of deep understanding of the Shastra, how to do it. So, Prabhupada gave us this, how the society members, they should come close together, and how he said before he left, your cooperation will be a test of your love for me. You know, in different ways, as devotees, we have to think how to do it. So sometimes he said if there's some differences, you have to just sit down and discuss everything, threadbare. Threadbare means discuss and discuss and discuss until there's nothing left to discuss. In this way, we have to develop a family. As I was saying before, Krishna says, Aham Bija Pradapita, I am the seed of all existences, or Sarvamam, I am the Vijamam Sarvabhutanam, I am the cause of all living beings, I am the father of all living beings. So if we actually can somehow meditate on this principle, that Krishna is the father then we have to also have the same feeling of fraternity, brotherhood, sisterhood. In the Kali Yuga, it's very difficult because the nature of Kali Yuga is the opposite, that everyone should have one's own right and one's own sphere of influence. So sometimes the example is given of rocks dropped in the lake. Two rocks dropped in a lake create concentric waves, and then when these waves intersect, it's called interference. You study this in physics, the different waves that cause interference. But if there's one Krishna at the center, just one rock, then there may be many, many waves, but they don't intersect with each other. So the principle, the deeper principle, is that somehow if Krishna can be kept in the center all the time, then the different waves will not intersect and interfere, but they will be all part of one circle, concentric circles. So of course these are very high and theoretical and deep principles, and they don't address some of the more day-to-day practical problems that we may encounter as devotees. Like, you know, someone keeps putting my shoes in the other room. I can't find the one I want to buy. How do I do it? So these are the things that Prabhupada gave us different directions. He said, first of all, we should have Ishtagosti. That means every week in New York, he implemented the system. We would discuss our future preaching, and we would also discuss Shastric principles, half and half. So we talk about Shastric principles, about the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and of Krishna and the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. We would share these realizations, Machitama Gita Pranam, because this is required and demanded in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna. Devotees should enlighten one another about Krishna consciousness, and then they should speak on also on practical matters. So it's a test that's still being, we're still being put through to unify Prabhupada society. And we're hoping that by the energy of the centennial, 100 years of Prabhupada, that we can become more humble. We can develop better systems for understanding one another, for integrating householder communities, for with the brahmacharis, making good facilities for everyone so that there will be less tension and difficulty. Just like here now, we're trying to build a bigger center somewhere between maybe Heidelberg and maybe a bigger place where more devotees can live. These are some of the practical things we have to do. So in one sense, these temples, they have become the bulwark of our Krishna consciousness movement. These are the places from which Krishna consciousness spreads, with books especially, and also with prasadam now, and with the kirtan parties that go out. And now we're developing the Namahata and the bigger communities of devotees. We're trying to make them more part of our family, bring them in, make them feel wanted, involve them. We actually bring them to the point of wanting to become full-time devotees, or at least becoming initiated devotees, follow all the principles, and somehow make this house a very warm and happy house that everyone can live in. So this is still a challenge facing our movement after 25 years, how to become free from envy and develop this. So one of the principles of the centennial is called uniting or strengthening Prabhupada's family, to make the family very strong. How to do this? How to... Sometimes, you know, in Prabhupada, he said that society should be built on love and trust. So we hear these words so much, love and trust, that they become hackneyed, or they begin to lose their meaning. Just like if you say any word over and over again, it loses its meaning. Table, 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 table. It stops having any meaning. So sometimes it's been a fact that we've used these words or we've heard them from Prabhupada so many times that we forget what they actually mean. And it means to actually develop a sense of deep affection for everyone in Prabhupada's family. Maybe an old devotee, maybe a new devotee, maybe someone who's having difficulty. But if actually this can be done, because love is actually coming from Krishna, this is the source. And if we can actually practice these principles in our devotional life, developing true love for all of Prabhupada's sons and daughters, then there could be a strengthening. The heart can be strengthened, and we can experience more of what the environment of the spiritual world is like. This was Prabhupada's idea, to create a spiritual community in the material world. people of high spiritual consciousness. And one of the ways this is tested and ascertained is through strong bonds of friendship and affection. It is said by Lord Kapila that one should practice svajati, and that is developing relationships. Especially one can develop close relationships with people who are like-minded. And that's explained in the teachings of Lord Kapila Dev in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And also, Mahatam Bahomanena Dina Namano Kampayam Naitvachai Vatma Tulyeshu. This is also given in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that one should be very compassionate to younger or newer devotees. One should be very submissive and serve those who are more advanced than oneself. And one should form fast friendships with those who are considered to be one's equals. Mahatabha Bhamanena. So these are some of the things given, some of the techniques, how to associate with devotees. Is it? Yes?
I heard that in Goloka Vrindavan there is
a form of Shantaras. Of course, there is, in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, we experience the most intimate associates of Krishna. So sometimes it's said that even those like the grass, they also have a relationship of fraternity with Krishna. But our original Swarupa also may not be in Goloka. It may be in the Vaikuntha planets, because one has such a relationship with Krishna, like a chivalrous relationship with Krishna. One may want to relate with Krishna in this way. So when that kind of Swarupa is there, one has a situation in the Vaikuntha planets. But there is also a form of Shantaras in the spiritual world, because there exists such things as trees and grass which have that kind of relationship with Krishna. But the difference is that a devotee doesn't actually aspire for Shantaras. The devotee aspires for the other four rasas, because in this way he's getting interaction with Krishna. The Shantaras, or the Shanta aspiration as we understand it, is to be completely passive. And a devotee doesn't want to be completely passive. He wants interaction. He wants Krishna to act with him. So therefore, devotees actually aspire starting from serving Krishna. Because when they serve Krishna, they get reciprocation. But in the Shantaras in Goloka Vrindavan, there's actually some reciprocation. Because Krishna and Radharani, they see the trees and they step on the grass. So there is some interaction. So in that way, the Shantaras in the spiritual world is not exactly the same Shantaras that we talk about and being completely passive. Because in the spiritual world, everything is interactive. So there's a little distinction.
Actually, the grass is more in Dasya Rasa.
It's more like in a Dasya Rasa. It can even be in the Madhurya Rasa in a very subtle way. But it's a subtle form. That's right. Yes?
So like this, the relationship on the spiritual level with the spiritual master is similar to the relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world?
Yes, in the sense that its question was, is the relationship between the living entity and Krishna in the spiritual world the same as the relationship with the spiritual master in the spiritual world, he said? In the material world. It's similar because it is growing, and the spiritual master is the representative of Krishna. So the relationship between the spiritual master, Janme Janme Prabhushe, is one of eternity, life after life, as we sing every day in that nice prayer. So it's an eternal relationship, as the relationship with Krishna is eternal, and it is also an ever-growing, expanding relationship, which increases day by day in its realization and its depth. Krishna's representative is the spiritual master. Ye me bhakta jana prata, te me bhakta chate jana, bhakta nam chie bhakta, te me bhakta tamo mataha. He says in the Padma Purana that one who is the devotee of my devotee, I accept him fully as my devotee. So Krishna's acting through the spiritual master. And we know Krishna through the spiritual master. We know the qualities of Krishna through the qualities of the spiritual master. So that eternal and ever-growing relationship with Krishna is the same with the spiritual master, in the sense that it is ever-increasing, expanding, growing, and deepening, and becoming more blissful as time goes on. Even after the spiritual master leaves the planet, the relationship is growing deeper and deeper, and more blissful, and more full of understanding.
Possible that a person who is Siddhi Sarup is Chandra Ras can become a devotee, and if so, can he change his Rasa to some kind?
These are very technical questions, so I'm not so expert, but I'll answer to the best of my ability. When one attains one's Siddha Pranala, or his original Sarup, his or her original Sarupa with Krishna, generally that doesn't change because a person is very satisfied. Just like that example I gave of the grass. But because one who attains the spiritual world is also invested with full transcendental energies in all the mystic cities, all the different eight mystic cities and beyond, what to speak of remembrance of past lives, it is possible that one can change one's original sarup and become something else. So one can go from becoming a cowherd boy to a gopi, one can go from a gopi to a monkey, from a monkey to the grass, from grass to... It is possible. Generally, it doesn't happen. I heard Prabhupada say this, so I know this is true. Because they're happy, they're satisfied being, because that's their original sarup. But because they have the power to change, and sometimes, in a very exceptional and unusual case, it changes, they can become something else. But because everybody is so satisfied serving Krishna in that particular way, according to his original sarup, his original rasa with Krishna, he's very satisfied and very happy.
Will one, a person who is in Shantara, become a devotee because he will be interested?
It's possible. It's possible. Actually, Shantaras is there in a certain degree in the beginning in everybody, because Shantaras means to see with a great kind of awe and reverence, and to just, it's the dim beginning of Krishna consciousness. So in that sense, anyone who approaches Krishna consciousness has some elements of Shantaras in him. He's just seeing that there is something greater than I am. When Krishna presents his universal form, that's another way of giving Shantaras. He's just showing he's very great, he's beyond me. I can't do anything, but I can understand that Krishna is beyond. So in that sense, everybody progresses from Shantaras as the step, first step, and then on to the next. So that's there for everyone. There's one conversation, Prabhupada was walking, there's a Mr. Patel in Bombay, there's some tapes. He's an old friend of Prabhupada's. And they were always talking and walking, and this man was joking with Prabhupada a lot. And there's some very funny conversations, and Prabhupada would joke with him. So he said that he wanted to give, Prabhupada asked him, you should give something to the temple. And he said, well, he said, I'm not very rich anymore. My wife used to have a lot of money, but now she lost it, so I don't have very much. So Prabhupada said, well, there's many poor children that are coming to our temple here in Bombay. They don't have proper clothing. So at least maybe you can give them some money so they can have proper clothes and we can bathe them and give them and make them nice and clean. So he was again, said, well, you know, I don't have so much money. I'm trying. At least I'm your friend. And then Prabhupada said, yes. He said, you are Shanta Bhakta. So the idea was that he wasn't really going to do active service, but he was going to appreciate Krishna consciousness. He was going to appreciate Prabhupada, appreciate the devotees, appreciate the philosophy. But it's not that he was actually going to do anything. So that's like Shanta Bhakta or Shanta Ras. There's that understanding Krishna's there. But that's the beginning, because we try to induce everyone to go beyond that stage. So everyone should go beyond Shantaras. That's why it's said in the spiritual world, there is no Shantaras, because everything is active. Even the grass is active. So it's really not, you know, like Shanta as we understand it. So we want to go beyond that point. It's a very dim beginning. And it's our desire to bring people beyond that stage. Because otherwise they'll just be in a very elementary stage to know that God is great. That's Shantaras. We want interaction. We want the Ras. The Ras to us means interaction. So therefore, it's not even a Ras in that sense. it's just a beginning to know that there's Krishna's there. But I want to do something. Right? As a devotee, I want to prove my love for Krishna, and I want to get reciprocation.
It's true when we find out that we're eternal, we become very happy. But sometimes I become overwhelmed when I think of eternity, you know. It becomes pretty scary. Is there a reason for that? Or,
well, we're conditioned to think in terms of limits. So all of a sudden, if it's like free fall, you know. If you go down a step, you know there's another step below. But if you go up another step and there's no more steps, you're falling through the air. So the concept of eternity is a little frightening, because by our conditioning, we learn to think that everything has a beginning and an end. The sun's going to rise, the sun will set. To think the sun's never going to set, that's very frightening, because immediately I think I'm going to burn up. Or if the sun will never rise, I think I'll freeze to death. Or, you know, if I'm not going to go to sleep, that's also very frightening. Sometimes as devotees, we're not devotees, we stay up all night. It's very disturbing. It's very disorienting. But sometimes as a devotee, maybe we stayed up all night. We stayed up and did our rounds in the morning. We've become very happy. Wow, I stayed up all night. I stayed up after John Masmi and I went to Guru Puja the next day. I'm completely in bliss. So for a devotee, actually, he overcomes that fear of eternity. Because we can't understand what eternity means from the material sense. We can't understand what death is. Because there's some part of us that actually wants that eternity. But at the same time, we're fearful. So we're also fearful of non-death. We're fearful of eternity. Because of our conditioning, we don't know what lies ahead. And we're fearful of the unknown. But as we gradually become more Krishna consciousness and we know what's coming ahead, then that fear goes away. And we can see that our Krishna consciousness and our happiness will increase. But it's natural to be fearful in the beginning. But once we know what eternity means, what will be there for us, the happiness and the consciousness, understanding will increase. And then we are looking forward to realizing our eternal nature. Yes?
I wanted to ask regarding the deity worship. I once asked, because I saw in India many people worshipping Gopal Krishna, and I got also one as a present. So I was asking.
Gopal Krishna means Gopal standing
Krishna,
alone?
The small Krishna with love.
Oh, Val Krishna.
Yeah. And I was asking why we are not allowed to worship, and the answer I got is because this is Vatsalya Rasa.
But who did you ask? I'm sorry. Oh, okay.
And because he said we are following Madhurya Rasa. But right. I forgot to ask why when we are worshipping Krishna Balaram, because this is also not this Radha Krishna of this.
You mean Bal Krishna? Balaram or Bal Krishna?
Yeah, no, why we are not worshipping Krishna Balaram? It's why we are worshipping. Because this is also not Madhurya Rasa. No?
Yeah, you mean Bal Krishna, Devi Krishna?
Yeah, this we are not allowed to worship because of Vatsalya.
I heard that also. That was my understanding. Mm-hmm.
And but why we are then worshipping Krishna Balaram, one could say, because this is also not Madhurya. This is also friendship.
Uh-huh.
So I forgot to ask this at that time.
Yeah. Well, Bal Krishna worship is a little different thing, because I think it's principally the Balabha Sampradaya which has this worship. So that's one reason why. It's a bona fide Vaishnava Sampradaya, which we accept and we appreciate and we respect, and we offer all obeisances to those devotees in the Balabha Sampradaya. That's one reason. It's a little different strain from what Prabhupada gave us to worship Krishna in this baby form. So we don't practice on our altar. But Prabhupada gave us many other forms of worship, like Jagannath and Krishna Balaram and Sitaram. But these also, they also include Madhurya. So they're not divorced from Madhurya. Even though there's the fraternity rasa, the rasa of friendship is very strong there. That's also, that includes Madhurya, because in the relationship of Krishna and Balaram and all of the servants of Krishna, even Advaitacharya Nityananda, they're always thinking of Krishna as their very, very dear friend. So there's an element of Madhurya Lila, of Madhurya Ras, in these friendships. Especially there's a very intimate relationship between Krishna and Balaram. Very, very intimate. So it includes elements. Although, and even in Gaur Nitai, of course it's like Krishna Balaram. We worship them, we worship Krishna Balaram as Krishna Balaram. Because there's a very intimate relationship, it's part of our sampradaya to worship Krishna and Balaram. They have very intimate relationships. And sometimes Krishna makes himself very subservient to Balaram, just like he does to Radharani. So we can worship these two, and they're part of our sampradaya, part of our worship, as also including Madhurya Ras. And our worship doesn't always have to be restricted to only Madhurya Ras. We also respect very much the Dasya Ras and the Rasa of friendship. And even in the Vatsalya Ras of Krishna and Yashoda, that's also a very intimate relationship. So sometimes we also worship them. It's not that we completely exclude that kind of worship, because in Damodarastakam we have the figures of Yashoda and Krishna. And we understand also from Nectar of Devotion that there are mixtures of rasa. We don't just have only Vatsalya Rasa without Madhurya Rasa. There's elements, and these rasas are often mixed together. So it's not that we have only Madhurya Rasa. We also have Vatsalya Rasa and Dasya Rasa and all the other rasas mixed together. Because within Madhurya Rasa, all the other rasas are automatically there. So in that way, we can say that we do have Vatsalya Rasa, because it's for sure it's contained within Madhurya Lila. So it's there. It's just that when we carry the deity of Bal Krishna, carrying the Ladu, it's like a little bit like another sampradaya. So we don't separately worship Krishna in that way. But indirectly, by worshipping Mother Yashoda and worshipping Radha Krishna and Krishna Balaram, we're also worshipping Bal Krishna. So it's not that he's excluded. He's there, but he's just not done separately. Okay. Yes.
Our Swarup form, is it already fixed, or is it dependent on the Spiritual Master Swarup, or on the desire maybe the Spiritual Master?
No, it's already fixed. It's known to Krishna, but we just have to uncover it. It's already there. Therefore, it's called the original. So I think I went a little long. We're going to have a short class today, so we should probably end. Thank you very much for your patience. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Lila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Svaran Jatra ki jai, Shri Rabhupada Sani ki jai.